Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. We have a special treat for you today. If you've been through the 5K challenge, and you might know him or think about him as the shoe guy, but he's so much more than that. There's a chain of running specialty stores in Atlanta that are called the Big Peach Running Company. Is that the right?
Very well done.
His name is Mike Cosentino, and he is, according to the website, his title is Chief Running Officer, which I love.
Yep, that's correct. Dean, thanks for doing this. Man, you have a great voice for this.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. And did you have a good trip down?
It was a really solid trip. I left early this morning.
To beat the traffic.
I knew once I got north of the city, it was going to be pretty breezy to get up here. And I think the weather that we've had this week kept a few people off the roads, and it was easy. And, of course, beautiful area you guys have here.
That's a good point. It was a good timing for you.
Yeah, it really was.
Good stuff. I have to say that we have these people in our life that you just meet them and they feel like a friend as soon as you meet them, like that. You're one of those guys. And so I really appreciate you, and you just come across as one of those kind of guys. So,
well, I would think most people would say that about you, and certainly what you're doing here and what you guys do through Upward is fantastic. And I remember meeting Mitchell quite a few years ago now, and the Run for God program. I mean, if we think about, somewhat of the journeys that we travel and the importance of the people that God very intentionally we recognize puts in our life, that's the way I felt about the Run for God program. So to come to know you through what you're doing with Upward, the history with Mitchell, and obviously Run for God, it is a very special relationship that has some pretty cool things in the past. But knowing you now, I think is a pretty good indication of a bright future as well. So this is going to be cool.
I appreciate that. Well, before we get too far into this thing, let me just tell everybody who's listening, if you listen to this podcast regularly, we're going to get back to the post of the week and the trivia questions and all that stuff next week. We're going to forego all of that this week, and we're going to talk about Big Peach Running and other stuff that are really specific to Mike today. So we'll be back. I want to start here.
Okay.
So I know Atlanta. Everything in Atlanta is – every street in Atlanta is named Peach Tree something. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a billion –
a lot of peaches.
Lots of peaches. So is that – was that the reason why the name of the store is the Big Peach Running Company, or is there more to it?
No, it is that. And I mean, people have heard – people who are familiar with Atlanta will, know some of the nicknames that were kind of popular, right? The ATL, Hotlanta. People would call it the city among the trees. There are lots of nicknames that every city – has, rightfully so. And the one that I just personally had enjoyed hearing about was when Atlanta was called the Big Peach.
Yeah.
And so instead of when we were thinking about the naming conventions, Atlanta Running Company or, Capital of the South Running Company or what have you, there was just something in the Big Peach that we felt might have some stickiness that would be worth trying. And then, obviously bringing our character icon to life, for those who have not seen our logo, we could actually utilize a peach and have some fun with it and kind of convey a personality that was intended to be, from the get-go, just really welcoming. And so I think the Big Peach allowed us to do that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool story. And I'm like you. Just hearing the words Big Peach Running Cup, they just kind of flow together. So it's really cool. So tell us the Big Peach story. How did you get started? Why did you get started? And just tell us how Big Peach came to be.
So, I think this is, for me, just an awesome indication of what happens when you get some of your personal interests to intersect with your professional aspirations.
Very familiar with that. Yeah, absolutely.
And there's almost nothing better. It's, truly a gift from the Lord where all of a sudden we're like, man, are these two items on top of each other as much as they are? So from a running perspective, I was not a runner necessarily growing up. I did a lot of team sports, and just like everybody else, certainly running was part of the curriculum to be out there on the field or to be able to do the other things that we were interested in. But it wasn't something where I was like, man, some of these, you know, student athletes these days who are logging 30, 40, 60 miles a week, that was not part of my history. But once I started in my professional career and was moved here to Atlanta, there was just nothing I could take on a plane with me. I had played a lot of tennis. I was a cyclist long before I was a runner. But taking those things, whether it was somebody to hit the ball back, whether it was my bike itself, that just wasn't getting on a plane with me. And, you know, for a little while, I was one of those guys who was, you know, out 3 to 5 days a week, multiple cities. And the only thing that I could kind of count on was my running shoes would fit in the bag. And if there is, and I know a lot of your listeners feel this way, if there is a great way to truly get to know not just your way around a new place, but truly the sense, the feel, the fabric of a community you've not necessarily spent a lot of time in before, man, go for a walk or for a run. Yep. So I just started doing that. And, you know, my journey led me to the Coca-Cola company. I was there for 7 years and had a chance to work with a lot of really good retailers. And along the way, I fell in love with retail as a discipline, as an industry, hospitality, guest services, merchandising, determining how to best manage and invest in inventory. And so it became this thing that I was running a ton of miles every single week, got into the ultra marathoning, certainly loved trail running. Anytime I had a chance to do that, I was doing races on a regular basis in a lot of places because I was always on the road. But then to, you know, really be given the gift of what makes people shop where they shop, what makes people recommend certain places to people they care about, what makes people go back or purchase the same type of products, and to have both the art and truly the science of that type of thing become a personal passion of mine that I could maybe deploy professionally. That's where I say that it really was my personal interests and my professional aspirations laying on top of each other.
Wow, that's really cool. What a great story.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny how you can take one thing, like whatever job you had that took you from city to city. If you had a different job that kept you in one place, maybe this never happens.
That is so true. And there are people out there, I'm sure perhaps some of your listeners that right now are in this season, that they don't know what the next step is, or they don't know what the calling is going to be. They sense it's going to come, and it will. You know, for me, I came to Atlanta to take a job with the Atlanta Braves, and I oftentimes do this. I'll do this with just a brief pause, but I'm going to put you on the spot, Dean. Who won the World Series in 1994?
In 1994. The Braves won it. Wasn't it 95? Was it 94?
It was not 94. So the reason this is such a great trivia question is no one won the World Series in 1994. It was the strike year. So that was the year I was with the Atlanta Braves. And like I'll tell people, if you're in the front office of a Major League Baseball or quite frankly, any professional sport team, and the product isn't actually on the field, furloughs and layoffs, they tend to happen pretty quickly. But the good news, if you get furloughed from the Atlanta Braves or from Major League Baseball in Atlanta in 1994, you've got a pretty good production coming to town shortly thereafter. Yeah. So I was an out-of-work sports marketer. With the Olympics coming to town, I ended up with an agency that was opening an office in Atlanta. One of their big Olympic-involved clients was Coca-Cola. They also had a few others. And so that was kind of the journey for me to retail as I came to Atlanta, intending to work in professional sports in the front office on the business operations side. That didn't work out for reasons that, you know, nowadays I'm just like, man, that was part of the Lord's plan altogether. Amen. That strike season was going to send me into an environment where I was exposed to some of the bigger employers in this terrific market, like a Coca-Cola, where now all of a sudden you go in that direction and get to work with these incredible retailers who taught me so much. Some of them independent businesses, some of them obviously very publicly traded, globally recognized businesses, but that was the underpinning of what we do now. And to your point, it's just a journey that you kind of lean into and trust his guidance every step of the way.
Amen. Amen. So how many stores did I count? 13 stores? Is that right?
Yep, that's correct. We have 13 stores right now.
And some of those are operated. I guess some of those are owned, and then some of them are franchises.
That's correct. I think like a lot of retailers, maybe there are two verticals that people might be familiar with. Corporate stores, what we call foundation retail. These are our legacy stores that we've had for, in some instances, 20-plus years, and truly are the nucleus of what we do. And I hope what would define, you know, how we do things in the future, improving every single day. Yeah. And then we also have a Peach Partner program that is that franchising side of the business. So I think some people would say corporate stores and franchise stores. We just use terminology foundation retail and Peach Partner locations.
Yeah, I like that. That's very descriptive. So what's your big vision for Big Peach going forward? What do you want to see? Let's say 10 years from now, what would you like?
So, you know, I don't know that we have this, especially when we look at 10 years, although I do think looking into the future is critically important, you know, as individuals and as organizations. I think it's a worthwhile exercise on a regular basis and take stock of where we are, take stock of what opportunities that we've been given and should perhaps declare a bit of a priority. But if we look into the future, one of the things that we know is even to this day, and you and I have been doing this a long time, you know, if we were going to count the tens of thousands of miles that you and I have run, we count the literally millions of miles that your listeners have likely walked and ran. There's still way too many people who have not been exposed either in the right way or at all to this lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
The benefits that it provide, not just from a health consideration. We know that's true.
Right.
But I mean, I've seen relationships improved. I've seen lives changed. I've seen friendships restored. And so when I think about the lifestyle, and we go back to the mission of Big Peach, to grow, to support, to enhance an active lifestyle. It's that. It's not about opening more stores, hiring more team members, selling more units of footwear. All those things are great byproducts. But to grow, to support, to enhance an active lifestyle, that was the mission written on the business plan before we ever opened a store.
Wow.
And it is still the mission to this day, because when that happens, all these other things that you and I already know and yet do not take for granted happen in places that they may not be happening right now. So that was part of the Peach Partner program as well.
Yeah.
The truth is we can get to communities that we might not otherwise get to. We get a chance to work with people we wouldn't otherwise get a chance to work with. You know, I don't traditionally timestamp a podcast. This is early 2025, less than a few weeks ago. We opened our latest store in a community, South Fulton, which is just south of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
It is the largest percentage of Black residents of any city in the United States.
I noticed that when I went through your website, I noticed South Fulton, that's an interesting place for a running store. So,
super cool, right?
Yes.
So the mayor, when he comes for the ribbon cutting, and I mean, these words were just, I mean, it just made the hair on my skin stand up, because he's like, we're not just going to be the blackest city. We are going to commit to being the healthiest city, right? But there are less than a half a dozen Black-owned run specialty stores in the United States. There's never been one in the state of Georgia. So they have the ability to do something like that. And then we go back to our mission to grow, to support, to enhance an active lifestyle. That's the way those types of things happen.
Yeah.
And we have great Peach Partners there. We have so much potential. And I mean, if you think about, well, what's the vision for the next 10 years? It's more democratizing this lifestyle and spreading it to places where it needs to be more pervasive.
Man, I love that. I've got goosebumps. you're getting me all excited about it here. That's awesome. What a great story. Well, Mike happens to be a runner, and you've been a runner for a long time, as you mentioned. And we're going to talk about his running and his thoughts on running and maybe some trends and things when we come back.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
We're back. So now, I don't remember why, but when the last time I saw you, we were at one of the Big Peach stores and we were recording a video.
Mm-hmm.
And you were telling me, I think, that you weren't running much at the time. I don't remember if it was because you were hurt or if it was because you didn't have time or what it was, but...
Well, I'm happy to report it wasn't that I was hurt. It was twofold, and I'm still running quite a bit. And I think that's the thing, Dean, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners can relate to this. Everything is relative, right? I used to run 80 miles a week. I'm not doing, in many weeks, half that right now.
Yeah.
But the fact that I'm running 35 miles a week is, for some people, if we take it into a different context, like 35 miles a week, you know, that's way too many, or that's outrageous, or I'll never get there. And yet they may find themselves there someday. They may be that man or woman who ends up at 80 miles a week. So it's all relative. The two areas of focus. We had that store that we talked about before the break that was coming online. We've got some other things that was making time a little bit difficult. The time with when I like to run early in the morning, everything being dark, the cooler temperatures, that had something to do with it. And then just the reality of trying to do a little bit more strength training and add some diversity to my fitness routine had something to do with it as well. So I'm happy to report I'm healthy.
Yeah.
This lifestyle is no less important, but you're right. My weekly and perhaps monthly mileage totals are a little bit less than what they've been at other times.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just this past weekend finished my first 100 miles.
I saw that. Oh, so you look great. I mean, for those who cannot see, when Dean stands up, he is fully vertical and looks like it had no wear and tear on him. How did it go?
It went well. Like I said, that was my goal, was to get at least 100 miles. It was a backyard ultra, mm-hmm. so it's basically however far you can go. But 100 was about as far as I could go. But I've got one little problem. I hope I don't have a stress fracture, but I've got some kind of a problem on my left shin right now. But other than that, I feel great.
Awesome. So, well, congratulations. That's an awesome accomplishment.
Thank you. That's one of those bucket list things.
Yep.
I wanted to do that. But now you've done it more than once.
I have.
Yourself,
I've done,
right?
I've done 7 hundies. And, I love that distance, not just because of the obvious challenge, but there, as you found out, I'm sure, there's a lot of strategy. And there's also a lot of things you need to orchestrate and to some degree kind of hope go right when you're doing something for that long. You know, I think it's more like a NASCAR race than it is, let's say, watching the Olympic marathon.
Yeah.
You got to get your pit stops right. You got to get your timing right. You got to get your nutrition right. You got to have your head right. You got to recognize that when you have a bad stretch, whether it's for a few minutes or quite a few miles, that things will get better. And conversely, when things are going really well and you're like, man, I can't believe I'm at mile 60 and I feel this good, don't you worry. That will change as well, right? So that's part of why I just love that distance.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've recognized about these long distances is that it's weird how you can just feel terrible. I mean, awful. Like, I'm not going to be able to go another 10 miles. And then 10 miles later, you feel like Superman.
That's exactly right. And it's interesting. And you've done marathons and what have you. I've done a lot of marathons. Once I start to feel bad in a marathon, until the marathon is over.
That's right.
I am going to feel bad. And so the training is about pushing that feeling bad as far away from the start line and as close to the finish as possible.
Yeah.
But in an ultra, for whatever reason, it's like if I start to feel bad, I'm like, this will change.
Yeah. I think it's great. It's great. And certainly it's a whole different thing. So is that your favorite distance to run?
So trail running is really my jam.
Right.
I still love to trail run. You know, I've not done 100 in, it's been 4+ years now. I don't know if I'll get back to that distance. One of the things that's really special, you know, to me now, and I did a couple of marathons last year, and so I still love that distance, but those were road races. I'd rather, to some degree, go out and run 40 miles on my own when I can control my schedule and can kind of determine when I want to do it, where I want to go.
Yeah.
That's become something that's maybe more enjoyable to me than doing lots of races.
Sure.
Each year, especially with my travel being more self-appointed than, hey, you need to jump on a plane and be here at this time and then trying to find something that works.
Yeah.
Now it's like, I'm going to set this weekend aside. I just sense this time of year, it's going to be beautiful in this location on this trail, and I can start here and maybe finish here, or I can get there and figure out a way to get back. And I've just had a blast doing that. My daughter, who is a sophomore at Ole Miss, just became the youngest female finisher at the Cruel Jewel 50 in 2024.
Oh, wow.
And she's got some things that she's doing. So now it's kind of that other side of it where I get to be a little bit of a coach and certainly a cheerleader and kind of an enthusiast. So I'm just having a ball with it, but I'm not making any big commitments as to what my favorite distance is these days.
It's just as much fun watching somebody else accomplish something and being there and knowing you were just even a small part of it as it is doing it yourself, isn't it?
So true. And I'll put this because I saw this very recently that I think embodies what you just said, Dean, and that is, you know, empathy, which I'm not qualified to really define or perhaps speak on, but where we would say empathy oftentimes is being able to put ourselves in the shoes of someone who's going through something difficult.
Yeah.
It's also empathetic behavior to truly celebrate when things are going well for someone. So to hear you say that, I mean, that's an empathetic outreach when you're celebrating somebody accomplishing something, whether it's in an ultra marathon or run or walk related at all. But it was just a great reminder when I saw that, and to hear you say that is super cool, because you're right. It is so satisfying, whether it's my daughter, whether it's a guest of ours from our stores, whether it's one of our team members, when something cool happens for them.
Yep.
I feel like it happened to me.
I know. It's great.
What a gift.
I love to share that kind of thing. So what's your longest run? So have you, and obviously you've probably done something over 100.
So, well, the Cruel Jewel, the race I just mentioned that my daughter did, the 50, which is actually a 59-mile endeavor. The 100, the Cruel Jewel 100, is about 108.
Okay.
So that was the longest that I had, had ever done. A lot of 100-milers are, you know, very imprecise, almost proudly, right?
Yes.
So when they say it's 100 or it's a 50, don't take them at their word, right? In all likelihood, it's 52 and a half, or it's 104, or whatever it might be, which is okay. So my longest happens to be the Cruel Jewel, which is here in our home state. There are a number of 100-mile races popping up in Georgia. Yeah. When I was really taking it seriously and even running those races competitively, you had to go out west to get those trail races at that distance. And now I think the state of Georgia alone has 3 100-mile events and lots of trail running opportunities and things like that. So it's changed a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed that. That's a good thing. It's a good thing.
It is.
That we're seeing more and more of it. My old high school coach is an ultramarathoner, been an ultramarathoner for years. He's got a running streak. I don't know if I told you this, but he's got a 51-year running streak. And, but he runs this. It's called the Ball State 500K race, if you've heard of it.
I have.
I just don't know. I don't have words. I don't understand how you do that. You start and you take some money with you, a credit card, whatever, and you just stop along the way and get what you need. I don't know. That's crazy to me.
Well, and I think that's what to me is really cool about that is I think many people, especially when they, you know, come into the type of programming that Upward offers, or they get started with some type of effort where their intent is to, let's just say, do a road 5K, which is a fantastic achievement, something we really celebrate as maybe even the main thrust of where our business started, because a lot more people are doing those neighborhood distances than people are out running the Vol State 500K, right?
Right.
But what they assume is just that every step is the same, every event is the same, and yet there is incredible diversity in this lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right? From being able to, you know, go for a walk with, I've heard Mitchell on this podcast talk about, you know, the rucksack. I would put that in this lifestyle, to somebody like your former coach who does those ridiculous distances, to somebody who's doing that 5K.
Yep.
There's just, if you get bored as a runner or walker, I have to say it's probably your own fault.
That's a good point. I love that.
One of the things my daughter and I are talking about, and I hate to go off on this little tangent, but I want to do a burro race this year.
I've heard of those.
Yes. So, I mean, I literally want to be attached to a donkey. It's a 50K event.
Yeah.
I mean, all these times when I was always worried about my pace per mile, and I'm setting the pace, and I'm doing the training, and I'm doing the conditioning to determine what kind of pace I can hold.
Yeah.
To be able to turn that over, you know, to a beast of burden, literally, and be like, all right, as fast as you go, I'm going to try to keep up.
Yeah.
And when you stop, I guess I'm going to have to stop, or I'm going to be pulling you as hard as I can and see if I can get you to move. So, I mean, there are just so many different ways to stay connected to this lifestyle. There is no shortage of possibility.
You are correct. I hadn't even really thought about that, but you're right. You're right. So, we've had some crazy things. I've had some crazy things happen to me while out on a run. What's the craziest thing that ever happened to you while out on a run?
So we talked about trail running and that being my thing. I was at, and for people who are in Atlanta, those who are not in Atlanta, this is a place worth running in your next visit. But the Chattahoochee River has this series of areas called the Chattahoochee River National Recreation Area. Mm-hmm. And I was in one of the more popular units of that system, Cochrane Shoals, and I was out running with my dog. Now, I will say I usually run early, and this may end up with a citation for me from the National Park Service. I had my dog off leash. I've always got ultra running dogs that are great with voice command, but I have them off leash and we just go, right? I just love the primitive nature of me and a dog. Just, you know, we go as whatever the distance of the day might be, or as long as we can go. And I hear somebody way up that I didn't even see yelling at me to put my dog on the leash. And I thought, my goodness. And I did not want to offend the person. If they were, you know, a little bit afraid of dogs, I wanted to respect that. So I grab my dog, and I always have a leash on me, put him. And as we're going forward, I think he's out walking his ferret all I see is this bushy tail going back and forth. I'm like, well, that makes sense. If my dog comes across a ferret on the trail, I could see how that would concern that the sure. ferret wouldn't fare too well, right? But as I get closer, it's not a ferret, Dean. He has a coyote by the throat underneath his foot. It was a rabid, as we later found out, coyote that literally had met him in the middle of the trail. He also had his dog off leash. The coyote attacked him below the knees. He was bleeding like crazy from his shin bones all the way to his feet. There was just blood pouring down.
My goodness.
But because he had his leash in his hand and not the dog on it, as the coyote was attacking him, he was beating this animal with the buckle of the leash and eventually got the animal subdued where he could actually get his foot on the throat of this unfortunate animal.
Wow.
But when I come up upon him, I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So he's got his dog off to the side. I now have my dog off to the side. And he just says, I'm not going to be able to hold my foot here much longer. So I was with a buddy of mine who was running. We get this long stick and we eventually are like, all right, let's go. He takes his foot off the animal. We put this long stick, so we're on either side of it, on the animal's throat so that the animal does not, you know, pop up and right. come after one of us or our dogs.
Yeah.
Eventually, the Cobb County Police are called. With all due respect to that fantastic police department, this was not the officer probably to send, yeah. was not in the best shape, could not get a vehicle there, so had to walk in however many miles.
Oh,
had
my
the
goodness.
Biggest sawed-off shotgun I had ever seen. And I'm like, dude, if you're going to use that on this poor animal with everything that's going to be, I'm not leaving my foot this close.
Yeah.
Right before we're going to put the animal out of its misery, the national park calls because of the possibility of rabies. You have to take the animal alive so it can be tested.
Yeah.
So now we have to wait on the National Park Service to show up. They do bring a vehicle out there and a cage. And so the run, of course, is paused for about 75 minutes.
Yeah.
And I just telling this gentleman, I'm like, you got to go get medical attention. But I mean,
yeah.
later find out, former military guy is tough as nails. Anybody else who had this happen, I don't know how it would have worked out, but the fact that he had enough, you know, of his yeah. consciousness to be like, I'm going to use what I have to kind of slow this animal down and then wow. stuck around. For years then, when I'd see him out there running again, I just called him Coyote Don because he had taken on the coyote and won.
Yeah.
But still to this day, to go back to your original question, the craziest thing I've seen while out running.
That is a fantastic story. I love that. I love that. Yeah, mine, I guess the thing that happened to me, another wildlife story, I was running in Sturgis, South Dakota, of all places.
Oh, my.
My wife and I, we used to drive all over the country, and it was off season. It wasn't, you know, there was nobody in Sturgis. And I went for a run early in the morning. It was crisp. It was cool. It was quiet. There was no wind. And I'm just running on this sidewalk. Well, the sidewalk's running down this nice little creek. And I can hear the water bubbling. And it's just, I'm just having a great time, just enjoying nature in general. Well, the path bends to the left, goes over a bridge, crosses over that creek, and then goes back to the right and follows it on the opposite side. As I'm crossing that bridge, I look down the creek just to kind of get a glimpse of the creek. And, you know, it's just beautiful, like I said. But I'm running with my head sideways, but I'm running forward. And as I turn back around, there is a deer closer than me to you, to me, when I turn back around. This deer apparently was doing the same thing, wasn't paying attention to where it was going, and it had come down this hill just onto the corner of the bridge, and as I was just about to come off the bridge, it was just coming onto the bridge, and we both scared each other to death. And that deer turned around and ran away so fast, and at the same time, my heart's in my throat, and if either one of us had waited a fraction of a second longer, we literally would have ran into each other. And so that's my
money probably would have been on the deer.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if we've done a good job of encouraging people to get out there on the trails with those two stories, but please know that do not let that slow you down. Get out there. You will be rewarded.
And that's not typical either. Those aren't regular days.
You think about how many miles we've done, how many years we've done this cumulatively.
That's right.
And I mean, we're both, I think, much better for it.
For sure. For sure. Well, everybody likes to talk shoes, right? And of course, you guys sell a ton of shoes. So when you wear your shoes. Do you wear the same pair of shoes regularly until you wear them out, or you rotate shoes around? How do you do it?
So a little bit of both. When I first started this, and you know, there may not be a ton of perks to, you know, working in specialty sporting goods, but having free product is one of them,
yeah.
Right? So we have the ability to test a lot of different products, and if there's something that we really like, it's really easy for us to get it. If not at, you know, no cost to us, certainly at a very attractive discount. And so when I started, it was, you know, always testing new products, knowing that I would be on the floor literally 100% of the hours that we were open. I wanted to have a sense of almost how everything fit, and
yeah.
a little bit of an idea, even though I wouldn't suggest that, well, if I like it or don't like it, then that means that you as our guest would like it or not like it, right? But mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to say, yeah, this one runs a little bit short, or this tends to feel a little bit more generous with the way the upper's been constructed, or it has a softer step-in feel. There were lots of reasons to test a lot of products.
Yeah.
But as I've gotten older, not only am I not working with as many guests individually as what I used to, now that we have, you know, nobody can be in two places at the same time. We have so many what we call guest advocates that are just so good. Me, I go into a stock room now. If I don't have my reading glasses, you're lucky to get the right size. If you don't tell me very audibly, it seems like with my hearing, I may not even remember what you said, because if I didn't hear it, I certainly am not going to remember it. But the other thing that I've learned is to ensure that I feel my best and continue to get those weekly distance totals in, I just am not doing a lot of variation. So I may not run a shoe all the way to the end of its useful life.
Yeah.
I am using very few products compared to what I was doing 12 or 15 years ago. If I find something that works, if I continue to feel good while I'm in it, largely I'm sticking with it. Now, it's usually for a lot of people, you would say, but still across two or three different models. And for those people, they would say, for me, it's just one model. Great. That's up to you.
Yeah.
But the days of wearing six different shoes on six different runs, that's behind me.
Yeah. Well, and as we get older, I think our body doesn't adapt to that kind of a rotation either as well as it once did.
You know, and that could very well be true. You know, for me, I think it's just a matter of being conservative. Each mile matters. When we first started doing this, we, to some degree, I bet, took it for granted.
Yeah.
That we're going to be able to feel this good tomorrow. We're going to be able to feel this good on our next walk or run. And I certainly believe that will be true, but I don't take it for granted at all.
Yeah.
And so if there's something that says, I feel really, really good, there's something that says, repeat the process.
Yeah.
Right?
That makes sense.
Repeat the process. If I felt this good, how much sleep did I get? What did I have to eat? What am I wearing on my feet? Do it again and get the same result.
Amen. So what sorts of trends are you seeing? You know, I noticed that at one time we were all talking about overpronation and how shoes were constructed to prevent that from happening and all that stuff. And the last time we were talking, you were talking about how that's not really kind of how shoes are made these days. So what are the running shoe trends and the way they're built and the things that are coming up and on the horizon, you think?
So it's been interesting. You know, I mentioned 20 plus years previously, and there has been a lot that's changed. And I can't speak for the 20 years that preceded me, and certainly I don't have a crystal ball, or you have not put it in the center of us to be able to look into the future 20 years from now. But I do anticipate that things will continuously evolve. Mm-hmm. And it's not that some things that were the case 20 years ago don't exist to any degree at this point, but the areas of emphasis have certainly changed. And to your point earlier about pronation, and some of you perhaps who have seen the videos have heard me talk about that as a definition. It's, you know, something we all do. It's how the foot travels once it's fully planted, as it makes its way into that point where it's lifting off to the next step. That's all the pronation cycle is. It's mm-hmm. not good or bad. There are different types of pronation. People would say, oh, I've heard the term overpronation or underpronation or neutral pronation. Again, matching your biomechanic or your individual gait cycle tendencies with shoes has been popular for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
To your point, Dean, there were elements in the shoes, ways that they were engineered that intended to ensure that almost everyone, once they had been kind of analyzed or had their gait, how they step, how they run, how they walk assessed, then it's like, we're going to keep everybody in the exact same, very neutral, very efficient position.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that emphasis has been decreased greatly now that we're in 2025. Not to suggest that everybody should just horrifically overpronate or underpronate, but to suggest that there is more science that says what the body wants to do naturally isn't all bad. So let's give that tendency, the body behaving with all of us perhaps doing it a bit differently, let's give the body a little more credit than what we might have in the year 2000.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So yes, it is something where we talk a lot about structured shoes less. We talk about the ingredient of stability in shoes less. It doesn't mean it's altogether gone. It doesn't mean it's completely irrelevant, but you're exactly right. It's just not as much a part of any conversation as what it was when we first got to know each other.
That's a good way to put it. The emphasis, not quite as much emphasis on it. And I've always thought it intuitively to me. Now, I sold shoes at one time. I worked it, and so I was very familiar with it. But I always thought it was interesting that a lot of the people that I knew that were bad over pronators, they didn't seem to be injured any more than anybody else. A lot of times, even if they wore a shoe that didn't look like it was the right shoe for them sometimes, just by the way it looked, a lot of times people just continued to run in those shoes and didn't have real problems with it. So I think you probably – that makes sense.
Well,
we may have overemphasized that at one time.
Well, and whether – it certainly was honest, and I'm not suggesting that it was a mistake.
No.
I do think what you said earlier is such an important thing to kind of tease out a little bit, and that is that you were kind of assessing it for yourself. Mm-hmm. What's working? Am I injured? What's not working? Am I injured? What's working? Does it feel good today? What's not working? Why didn't I feel as good today? I think that's so critically important. And of course, in stores like ours, to be able to bring that information in.
Mm-hmm.
And then for those who have never purchased a pair of technically capable running or walking shoes, to just be honest and say, well, here's what I'd like it to feel like, or here's what I'm going for, or here's why I'm starting this routine. All those things are now the things that kind of get pushed into the forefront so that we can match an individual, not just their physical attributes, but also their intentions with the shoe.
Yeah.
Because some of the things that we are talking about, you know, you'll hear now carbon plated, and the weight of shoes that I used to race in is almost everyday weight at this point. I mean, I remember, you know, my marathon PR shoe was, you know, 7 ounces. And nowadays, a men's size nine, which is the traditional size for a sample shoe, oftentimes isn't more than an ounce or two more than that anyway.
Yeah, for just a regular training shoe.
That's exactly right. So, I mean, there continues to be some really cool things that are happening in engineering and product design. It's just going back to the theme of emphasizing something different than what was the case a decade or so ago.
So it looks like to me, from a trending standpoint, the foams that they use these days are so much better than they were at one time. What's the difference? What has happened that has made the technology that goes into the foam in running shoes so much better now?
So, you know, some who have either been part of running shoe design as an enthusiast or have done a little bit of research or homework will know the three letters EVA. Mm-hmm. And that has been a primary ingredient in running shoe foams for a long time. I think what has happened is there's been a boldness, maybe even a little bit of bravery, to put other materials inside the midsole besides just stacking everything with a conventional EVA. And I'm sure there are lots of stories in our manufacturing partners of what didn't work, what didn't feel good, what'll never see the marketplace. But now we've got these discoveries of how to make things lighter, how to make things feel softer, how to make things feel more responsive. And I think that's kind of the cool thing in this day and age, and that is that how a midsole was made before didn't matter the brand, almost didn't matter, the release date. It certainly didn't matter the gender. It was, you know, kind of one size fits all in terms of the foam.
Yeah.
Now there's much more distinction by manufacturer and maybe even by collection for each manufacturer. And I think that's kind of fun, especially for product geeks it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess you feel like, are we reaching the point of where they're about as good as they're going to get? You think we're going to still see a lot more improvement in those things?
So I love that question, Dean. And it's funny, again, you know, I'm going to lean into how long you and I have been doing this a little bit. I thought that for so long, right? I mean, there were times, I will say, first, my biggest fear when Big Peach opened was that would people come to a store like ours where we emphasize the guest services, the hospitality, the customer experience more than anything, even more so than the product, right? We have to have a great assortment. We have to have, you know, product knowledge that we can impart in a comfortable, welcoming way. But what happens when you cannot get a shoe at Big Peach for $100 or less? And that just terrified me.
Yeah.
And at this point, if you find something at Big Peach for $100, it's on a serious markdown.
Yeah.
Right? It was something we overbought.
Mm-hmm.
And the marketplace has seemingly been okay with that. Now, I'm not always in favor of the inflation, and I could get on my soapbox about I don't think that running shoe inflation has been particularly well orchestrated in many instances. But the other thing was, how long until we hit that plateau, or maybe even the ceiling, of what can make running shoes really fun and even sexy to talk about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it has not, that hasn't happened either.
No.
There's always something. So at this point, I would say, I don't see this reduction or elimination of cool factor being somehow integrated into running shoe design, because I thought that would be the case a long time ago. It hasn't become the case yet. So at this point, I just trust it's going to continue and maybe always be the case.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good, because I feel the same way. I remember thinking, well, running shoes, you can't really do a whole lot more with them.
Yeah.
And here we are today, and it's the running shoe today is nothing like it was 20 years ago. It's crazy.
Well, and there are some cool things that are happening. I think we're still, you know, a number of years out, but, you know, fully compostable materials.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that, you know, one day I run in it and the next day it's, you know, part of what's in my spinach salad or what have you. I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah. Maybe in my lifetime, certainly not by the end of this week. But I do think the material story is going to be out front for a while, and it won't always be about, you know, sustainability or that type of forward thinking. I think in some instances, we're going to continue to say, well, it's faster. It's more likely to keep people on their feet longer and feeling better. I think there are so many cool things that could happen, but I think a lot of them will be materials.
Yeah. Well, I remember when Hoka came into the U.S. market, and prior to that, I guess – when I noticed it, I shouldn't say when they came in, because I don't know when that was. But we were talking about minimalist shoes at one point, and then here comes Hoka with these, what I call maximalist shoes, which big, big, heavy, not heavy, but big, thick midsoles that have a lot of cushion, really soft. And we had a group of people who were advocating for, you want it to be as natural and close to the ground as possible and want it to feel like a sock, basically, on your foot. And you got these big, big, thick shoes. And some people claim that a lot of the injuries that we have seen in running is because the shoes are so thick that we rely on that cushioning, and we need to be more reliant upon normal, the way our bodies were made to work. Our bodies were made to absorb that shock themselves, and so we don't need the shoe. Where is all that today, and what do you see going forward?
So all of that is seemingly alive and well, right? And it goes back a little bit to what we said earlier about how there's so many individual considerations. And, you know, if we set aside what at the time was kind of referred to as barefoot running, even if people had shoes on, you know, it could have been the Vibram Five Fingers or other similar products. I think that has had its time and is for most people gone. Not to suggest you'll never see somebody in a pair of Vibram Five Fingers, but the number of people who are actively and maybe even exclusively running in that type of product are very few, and I think for good reason. Mm-hmm. At the same time, when we think of two different considerations that are part of this overall discussion, first of all, it is, well, how much cushioning do you put in the midsole itself? And for a long time, the standards were traditionally 24 millimeters of cushioning in the heel, 12 millimeters of cushioning in the forefoot. And so the two considerations are, one, nowadays, you know, we have many shoes on our footwear wall that it's 30 plus millimeters of cushioning, maybe in the heel and the forefoot. But then the other thing is that relationship between heel and forefoot. For a long time, going back to that 24-12, it was 12 millimeters differential.
Right.
When we got into that, everything from barefoot running to what was more lower to the ground, what oftentimes was changing wasn't the millimeter or what we call the stack heights of a midsole. It was that differential. Now, all of a sudden, it would be 24-20. So instead of being 2-1 heel to forefoot, it was just 4 millimeters of difference. If it was a lower built shoe, it might be 12-8, right? Where, yes, that was less cushioning, but the differential came to almost mean more than how much cushioning. What was the relationship between how much cushioning in the heel versus how much in the forefoot? And what used to be the most popular differential, 12, has been replaced by 8 to 10. There are plenty of shoes on the market that now it's 4 to 6. If someone's like, well, tell me what it might look like. Well, if we look at Hoka, Hoka's most popular differential is 6. mm-hmm. but it might be 42-36, right? Where it's 42 millimeters in the heel, 36 in the forefoot. Vibram was 0-0, right? There was no stack height, but the real thing, similar to Ultra, that might have had a stack height of 12 or 20 in the heel, but also had 12 or 20 in the forefoot.
Right.
So there are two things that I think when we talk about, well, is the midsole overstuffed, or is it more conventional, or is it minimal? It's not just, well, how much cushioning is there,
yeah,
but what is that relationship? So I think, you know, that's where what you like to experience when you walk or run and what seems to be working when you're doing it has to be taken into account. The last thing I'll mention is these materials that these manufacturers are using are tested ad nauseum over and over again. The amount of protection that you're getting from a less stuffed midsole still meets the standards of keeping the impact out of the body.
Yeah.
So somebody who likes a softer ride should get a maybe more stuffed midsole, but it's the ride that it's delivering, the way it feels, the way you even want it maybe to look. It's not that you're not getting ample protection, appropriate protection in something that's a little bit lower to the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. And then thinking back now, about the evolution of all that, that all makes great sense.
Well, and I think that as we go forward, we're continuing to see, you know, I'm in a pair of shoes right now. It's called the Brooks Glycerin Max. They were not a brand that said, we're going to go first on overstuffed midsoles. They weren't even one that immediately got behind what became Hoka. As right now, as I already timestamped this earlier, Hoka, from a share percentage, sells more pairs of shoes inside our little universe than any other brand.
Wow.
And Brooks didn't exactly say, well, we're going to get first in line to kind of follow Hoka or try to beat Hoka at their own game. But now they have this shoe. It's a $200 shoe. It was part of why they, you know, gained 6 points of market share in November of last year.
Wow.
Because consumers, when it feels really good, regardless of whether it's minimal or maximal, that's what I want to put on my feet.
It's what feels good.
Yeah. And it feels great.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, I know back when I was working in the carpet industry, we would have these color lines for a particular style of carpet, maybe a more popular style of carpet. You might have 60 different colors. Mm-hmm. But in the end, you were only selling six that were really popular. You might sell here and there on those other 54 colors, but mostly it was just those six.
Yep.
But having all those colors available seemed like a good thing to the customer. Even though they were going to choose one of those six, they didn't want to see six choices. They wanted to see 60 choices, and it made them choose one of those six, choosing one of those six more likely. Running shoes, I know the more popular styles will have a million different colors to them. I know you guys can't carry every color, obviously. How do you make those decisions? And I know at one point in time, the colors of running shoes were, it seemed like the wilder they were, the better. But it seems like we've pulled back from that a little bit now. Is that true?
I agree with that. And these are things that we're starting to see come back around, like a lot of the fashion that, you know, that I'm going to call them kids, but these young men and women who are in our stores are wearing, you know, when they're not working on the floor, it's the stuff that we used to wear. It's back, right? And same thing has kind of happened now that we've been around for over 20 years, because when we first came in, I look at old pictures and almost all of the shoes were white without that much color. And then we went through, you know, a season where it was a lot of gray, a lot of navy or darker blue hues. Certainly black was popular. And then to your point, Dean, you know, everything looked like it was right out of Carnival or what have you, with all these wild colors, poison yellow and the brightest pinks you could find. And now I think we're kind of moving away. It's almost like we're moving back the other direction. We went to the darker colors again, and now we're starting to see a lot of affinity for white and different, you know, shades of vanilla and shadow and what have you. So it really is. It's interesting. It's ever changing and it is evolving. And you're right. The manufacturers now have so many, especially on the more popular models, so many colors to choose from.
Yeah.
And going back to my affinity for retail and the business and to some degree, both the art and the science of retail, that's one of the biggest responsibilities we have, right? It's, yes, very much about, you know, how we sell and doing it in a way that is satisfying, not just for us, but candidly to our guest. But there's also that part that most people don't see, maybe think about, It's how we procure, how we buy.
Yeah.
And if we do that irresponsibly, it's of course going to show up on our footwear wall. It's going to show up on the selection. So it is. It is a bit of a what I call legalized gambling effort for us. What do we spend our open to buy dollars on? What do we spend our procurement resources on? Yeah. And is that the right product based on what our guests want and what the marketplace is suggesting? Now, having said that, you know, we do carry everything online.
Right.
So just like, you know, so many retailers these days, including carpet, where it's like a vast majority of the sales are in those six colors, not the other 54 that it comes in.
Yeah.
Spending money on warehouse space just so you can have all 60 in stock may or may not make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to pull it up on a tablet and say, well, here are the other 54. I can get a sample here by the end of the week. Or if that's the color you really want because you've already picked out the furniture.
Yeah.
For sure, we can get that. And we would have that installed by whatever timeline you've given us. And the same thing is true for us. If somebody comes in and be like, well, I was really hoping to get this in the navy blue color that I saw online and we don't have it. If it's available, we can usually get it pretty quickly.
So this is a really, this is a fascinating question for me. I personally want to know the answer to this question.
Yeah, yeah.
How many people really care about what color their shoes are versus I don't care what color it is. I really don't care. Yep. I just want a comfortable shoe. And if you tell me you don't have it in this color, but you get it in this bright pink, I don't care. If it feels good on my foot, I'm going to wear it. How many people care and how many don't?
So here's what I'll say. Kindly to you, you are in the minority.
I typically am.
Well, once again, you find yourself not all by yourself, because I feel the same way. If it feels great, and you know, I don't want to, you know, suggest I don't care at all. And I'm certainly not going to suggest that when I get a chance to basically choose whatever I wear, given that I have all the options that I do. And certainly, like I said earlier, get our product at a cost most people don't. I'm going to choose the color I want, right? So like I said, it just doesn't matter at all. But most people, and I think we've manufactured this to be in the case because it has changed. It's not always been the case. The manufacturers, when they start making 4, 6, now sometimes 26 colors available, what do you expect to have happen? We're going to care more about the color. So yeah. Before, when manufacturers either had lesser resources for production or lesser boldness in terms of how much they were willing to produce, there didn't seem to be that many people who cared because it was kind of like, you know, what was the old Henry Ford quote? You can get it any color you want as long as it's black.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that was the way it was with running shoes.
Yeah.
We never got the question, does it come in any other color?
Right.
Now, because you've got the ability to look online at a moment's notice and you can see that it comes in 24 colors, of course you're going to ask the question, does it come in any other colors?
Wow.
Right? So we've only manufactured this for ourselves. And these are conversations we're having with our vendor partners.
Yeah.
Because it makes it tough for us. It makes it tough for them. We've kind of become, you know, at the mercy of our own creation.
Yeah.
Right? We were the ones who built all the excitement around color.
Yeah.
And now there are instances where we're like, we're going to miss the sale, or worse, we're going to disappoint this guest because we can't get the color they want.
Mm-hmm.
But we only have ourselves to blame.
Yeah, that's an interesting evolution. But I see it. That's what's happening in the carpet industry as well, or did happen in the carpet industry as well. Well, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Mike about some spiritual things.
Upward Running is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness and faith journeys. You get these weekly podcasts, but there's so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there too. If you're not a member, join today at upwardrunning.com. It is the best value you'll find to fuel both your faith and your fitness.
All right, so we're back, and not only are you involved in this Big Peach Running and all the stuff that you do with them, but you're also a child of God.
Indeed.
Right? And so tell us, maybe, do you go to a big church, little church? Are you in Atlanta?
So I have, you know, the good fortune. It's a little bit of a dichotomous existence. Obviously, the business is in Atlanta. My family and I live in Blue Ridge, Georgia.
Okay.
And so, you know, I keep a place in Atlanta. You know, this was a little bit of both a lifestyle choice for my family and I. Mm-hmm. And it was also a conscious decision in terms of, you know, if I really not just trusted in the Lord, but also trusted our team, it would be manifest perhaps more quickly by saying, look, I'm 100 miles away from our nearest store. And even though I'm working on the business and maybe in an environment like what we're doing here taping this, the guest services are going to still very much meet our standards. The difficult work of buying the right inventory is still going to happen uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. And whether I'm doing that from the office in the store or in Blue Ridge or somewhere else has to be the case if we're going to reach the potential I believe that God has given us. And so I've been in Blue Ridge for the last 12 years. So, you know, the idea of a big church in a place like Blue Ridge is completely different than the idea of a big church in Atlanta. But I do attend a non-denominational church in Atlanta. I'm an inactive elder at that church. It's been the church that we attended from the first week that we moved up there. And, you know, just would... you know, second, what you already know, and that is the importance of having a church home. Certainly when certain things, you know, transpire or to be celebrated in your life, to be able to have that community, super important.
Amen. Amen. So would you want to talk about your testimony and how you came to know the Lord, when that happened? And
sure. So, you know, as far as coming to know the Lord, you know, I grew up in the Catholic Church, was a Catholic school kid through middle school. There wasn't an option. And I'm not going to suggest I didn't know the Lord, but I think it was I knew more of the Lord than maybe knew the Lord. Sure. And as, you know, ultimately I came to some of the adult responsibilities that all of us know and hopefully embrace, including being a man of God, being a husband and a father, you know, trying to balance that with my business became what I would say is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And there was a season where I was making some very bad decisions. And in those bad decisions, I saw people, including and most notably my wife, continuing to make really good decisions and to really not just lean into the Lord, but also to commit herself to prayer, praying for others, including people every once in a while, me, if you can imagine, that she probably would have had no reason from an earthly perspective to pray for, but still did.
Yeah.
And with that, I was baptized as an adult in Atlanta, along with the rest of my family.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, that's been now over 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And to be able to have that ability to say it was a conscious decision, and the decision that we are now going to walk out not just reflects that we believe in a Savior who is way more merciful than what I deserve, but also is not just the Lord of my life, but the Redeemer of forever, is a confidence that you can't find on a balance sheet or, quite frankly, in a press release.
Wow. That's a great story. The idea of being baptized with your family is really, really special. Man, that's so special.
Well, and what I will just quickly say, you know, for those who have maybe are even in the midst of struggles with their family, it might be their marriage, it might be their ability to kind of, you know, feel like they're doing the best job they can as a parent. That is something that, again, the Lord will continue to coach you, to guide you, to heal. And so my wife and I were baptized literally in the exact same session. Our kids, just a couple of weeks later, it was a conscious decision by all of us. Yeah. And now that is part of our story. Yeah. And so we recognize that decisions we made together then are part of how we make decisions together now.
Yeah.
And that's the real cool part of the story. And the Lord has been faithful for sure.
Wow. How old are your kids now?
So my son, our oldest, is now 22.
Okay.
And my daughter is 19. So we're somewhat empty nesters. My daughter's at school, and I have the good fortune of my son now working in our business. He's running one of our business units.
Oh, wow. Very good. Very good. So do you have a favorite, like, do you have a God story where, you know, you just, I love to hear just these God stories where circumstances just come together and it's like it's clear that God just put all these things together.
So for those who know me, they know this story, especially those who are part of our organization. Many of them, you know, kind of lived it with us. You know, I don't believe I've shared this with you or Mitchell in the past, but in now it's been almost 4 years, in fact, again, continuing to timestamp this, I'll maybe mention a specific date, but 4 years ago, my son was involved in an automobile accident. He was not expected to survive. The passenger did not survive the accident. In fact, it was 4 years ago yesterday that she passed. And the way the community came together to support the families that were involved. Obviously, my son did survive. I just mentioned that he's 22 now. And watching him go from not just that prognosis, but an inability to move, an inability to speak. I mean, I'll never forget, Dean, when the hospital called, and it was during COVID protocols, when the hospital called, we have a day, the accident happened on January 12th, and so I refer to that now as Transformation Day. Because even though, you know, I was fully baptized and bought by the love and the blood of Jesus before this, that day I refer to as Transformation Day for me and for my family, because of the fact that when that accident occurred, it was the time that we truly had to surrender to His will. Mm. And He chose to bring my son through it. And candidly, I don't know what I would have done if that would not have been the result.
Yeah.
But I do know, and my wife talks about this, and we genuinely believe this when we talk about it, that, you know, we had to say, you know, Lord, first, He's yours before He's ours.
Wow.
And we trust You. And now, you know, again, corresponding, and I won't pull it up on my phone, but corresponding yesterday with the father of the young woman who didn't make it.
Yeah.
To still have the type of relationship that suggests I can't put myself in his shoes.
No.
I can still picture certain things. They were both airlifted to the same hospital. The hospital rooms were literally within sight of each other when the doors were open. In the limited instances, we could visit our children. Because of COVID protocols, we'd go in together. We could literally look into each other's rooms and just see our children there unconscious. And yet the question that you asked was, is there a story that, you know, kind of reflects the love of the Lord? Even in the exchange with this father who lost his daughter, the love of the Lord is there. I see it in his response. And I know he's walked a very different path than what we have now, that my son has been medically declared as a full recovery.
Yeah.
When they said, you know, at the onset, he's not going to make it. When they said he's not going to be the same person. And now here on the other side of it, to know that he's been medically declared as a full recovery. And yet this young woman and the father who I have this exchange with and have a relationship with, completely different.
Yeah.
And yet I can still see the love of the Lord working through him when we're together, when we have these types of exchanges on these dates, like the day she passed, like her birthday. It's just, I mean, we talk about, you know, joy and peace in a way that sometimes makes it, in my opinion, incorrectly about happiness. It truly is. The joy and the peace of the Lord is the contentment and the trust that comes with not just following and knowing him, but quite frankly, turning it over to him.
Knowing he's got it.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. So do you have a favorite verse, book of the Bible, or something that just stands out to you as kind of the way that you do things?
So, you know, obviously, you know, there is encouragement that Paul gives Timothy that as a business owner and as a father, that is, you know, really important to me, because we're talking about, you know, go forward and, you know, live your life in a way that is God pleasing, as well as raising others up and giving people work that at one point Paul maybe felt like only he could do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the book of Timothy is a big highlight for me in the Bible, but there are so many good parts of it that we could call out or probably spend the rest of our time together talking about. But I love that season where Paul is actively mentoring others, providing an instruction in the name of the Lord, but looking to the future, knowing that it is going to be dependent on others and what the Lord chooses to do through them and not him.
Yeah.
And now, you know, 20 plus years into a business and having conversations with you that might say, well, what does it look like 10 years from now? You know, that question might have been completely different to me when I was 35.
Yeah. Yeah.
At 55, I'm more like Paul than Timothy.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. I like that. Yeah. The thing I admire about Paul is the confidence that Paul has in the Lord as he's talking to Timothy. You know, it's, I want to have that kind of confidence myself when I talk to somebody.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not necessarily easy.
No.
And, you know, what Paul and I joked, you know, many years ago and still believe this, Paul, given our conversation earlier, he was the ultra apostle, right? The mileage he covered and the things that he endured. He was the ultra apostle. I would not have wanted to take him on in the Leadville 100, yeah. Right? I mean, he was unbelievable. But then also to be able to look back.
Yeah.
And make sure that there wasn't this disruption in his wake is so cool and a great lesson for all of us, I think.
Yeah, I'm much more a Peter than a Paul for sure.
But we all get there, and obviously right. Peter has done his.
He's got his good role too.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, here's a trivia question for you. I don't know if you know, as far as I know, there are only two sports that are mentioned in the Bible. And of course, running is one of them. Yep. It's mentioned over and over again. You mentioned Paul. Paul mentions running a number of times. And it's mentioned in both the Old and the New Testament. But there is another sport mentioned in the Bible. Do you know what it is?
Oh, man, you're asking a running store guy. A store beside a sport besides running.
It's a difficult question.
See, you're getting me back for my who won the World Series in 94.
Yeah, seems fair. Because I should have known the answer to that question. When I say the answer to this question, you'll go,
And I'm going okay, hit me with it.
Wrestling.
I wanted to say wrestling because, and I will say this wasn't from my knowledge of the Bible. I was like, well, which sports are old enough that they could have been written in Old or New Testament times? So, okay, I should have been more confident. There's a lesson for everybody right there. If you think you know the answer, be bold enough to say it, because I didn't do it and I just missed out on a chance to win Dean's trivia contest of the day.
Well, you know, when Jacob wrestles with God, it talks about wrestling.
Okay.
So that's the only thing I can find that's other than running.
And
so, but that just tells you how important running is, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you look at so many places that the verses that include it are written. In some instances, I think, you know, there's probably a misperception, maybe even inaccuracy if you get the greater context.
Sure.
But what is very special always is drawing attention to the Bible.
Yeah.
And even if the context isn't perfect, if somebody's like, well, I wonder what that verse is, or I saw that person who just, there's a joy about him or her, even when they're out here suffering, I'm going to open my Bible for the first time and see what that verse is. Man, what an awesome way to kind of invite someone into a relationship.
100%. Well, when we come back, we'll take some short questions.
Okay.
At Upward Sports, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey, but we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. You can sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you helpful tips of the day and finish with an encouraging quote in each episode. You must be an Upward Running member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today.
All right, well, we're back, and I'm just going to ask you some just short kind of fire at you questions here. Okay?
I hope I do better than I did the trivia contest.
That was a completely unfair thing I did to you there. So here, this one's directed right at you. Are super shoes indeed super?
So the materials right now are super, but similar to the idea of what's really super today will be standard tomorrow and be kind of blasé by the end of the week. What's super right now won't be super next year.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
We'll have a new super.
I like that. So what's the craziest question anybody's ever asked you in one of your stores?
We got an email one time that indicated whether or not we would be available to help someone pin their bib on. And I thought, well, that's where the name Big Peach apparently doesn't say enough, because I think what they thought we were more of a running club.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I am all for people doing their first event, but I just hadn't anticipated the question. And we know with those safety pins, perhaps there's even an element of danger there. I don't know if my insurance policy would allow us to take a more proactive measure on that, but getting that message that said, do we pin bibs on for people? I didn't know how to respond, but I indicated we're here to serve.
That's good stuff. So are port-a-johns as bad as some people think they are?
So the advice I would give, get there early, not just because it will help you get, you know, kind of mentally and maybe somewhat physically focused, but you do not want to use the portable toilets toward the end of everybody. That's my thing on portable toilets. If you're there first, it's fantastic, especially if you like the outdoors. I would even say, you know what, this is no different than using the campground restroom.
Yeah.
But if you pick the wrong one and you're at the New York City Marathon.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's, you know, 20 minutes before the race starts, as opposed to getting out there 2.5 hours early. No one can help you.
That's a good point. There's a big difference from one to the next, for sure.
Yes, indeed.
Is it better to be smart or fast?
Smart.
Okay.
I had to think about that. And it goes back to, Dean, what we were talking about earlier, the distances that we like and what have you. You got to be smart as well.
That's true.
Now, if we were running 5Ks or if you and I were 40 years younger, we may feel differently.
That's
so
right.
This is an age-graded answer. I'm going with smart.
Going with smart. Yeah, I like it. Although I don't know. As you mentioned, I think there's been times in my life where I'd rather be fast than almost anything else. Yeah. So if you could try it, would you ever want to do the Barkley marathons?
Yes.
Yes.
It's the easiest question you're going to ask.
Is that right?
Yes. If I could get in. Yeah. I mean, I love that stuff. I love the adventure. I love the outdoors. I don't mind suffering. And I'm also equally as confident that I wouldn't finish. I might not get through one loop, but to try it would be very cool.
Yes. Yeah. So what? Well, I'm not. I don't know. I don't like trails.
Oh, see, we need to spend more time together.
Yeah.
Maybe we can change that. The Barkley won't help you change that.
No.
But there are some places that with your fitness that I think you would be like, man, and truly we think about some of the inherent goodness of this podcast, you know, the beauty of the Lord in places that are only available through trails. That's part of where I see the Lord on a regular basis.
Well, and there's a ton of trails. Right up in Chattanooga, there's tons of trails. And so I've got no excuse. I think this goes back to the smarter, fast thing. I would rather run faster.
Yeah.
And on the road, you run faster.
That's exactly right.
And I think that's really in my brain where the disconnect is.
Although
the fact that I wind up on the ground too many times.
And that, you know, that doesn't go away. But what I would say about trail running, at least in my experience, is it's a little bit, you know, for people who are baseball fans, it's a little bit like the lead bat. That if you go out and, you know, a workout or two a week, even if you're trying to get fast at a 5K or you're running a road marathon, it's like taking that lead bat into the on-deck circle, swinging it for a number of instances. And then when you grab your regular bat and head to the plate and it's time to go, that bat feels light.
Yeah.
Right? So I do think there's a training benefit to incorporating a little bit of training running or trail running into your routine.
That's a good point. So as a running fan, do you like cross country or track?
Cross country.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it goes back to that trail running, I think.
Yeah.
I had the good fortune of being the community coach for Fannin County High School when my daughter was there.
Okay.
So I got a chance to, you know, kind of see the discipline close up. And with track, one, I never did it. And two, there are so many distances and parts of that I just am still to this day intimidated by. It's a little bit of a default to cross country as well.
I love
like when the Olympics are on. I've been to the World Championships a few times as a spectator. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
So I think you're asking me as, you know, kind of a quasi participant.
Yeah.
As a spectator, you know, track and field, you can do it from your living room, the energy, and especially over, I don't know if you've been to, you know, a meet in Europe or what have you, but I mean, to see just the fandom around track and field in that type of environment is crazy.
Pretty electric.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, which is worse, a really strong headwind or a tough hill?
A strong headwind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, for me, you know, the truth is I'm not all that sizable. So I feel like, you know, a strong wind really makes it tough for me to get through. It wasn't that long ago. We have a one of our team members who also does some work at the Bermuda Marathon. And I remember doing that race a number of years ago. And it was a two-loop course at the time for the full marathon. Half marathon was one loop. Full marathon was two loops. And the wind, all I could think about was, I got to do this one more time. And that's still the case where, you know, and I don't know if somebody who's more powerful or stronger than what I am would say differently, but when you're trail running, you're used to doing the big climbs.
Yeah.
And I have a reasonably good engine that I can just crank those things,
yeah,
you know, one after the other, the wind.
Yeah.
That's why I'm doing more lifting. That's why I wasn't doing as much running. I got to be able to get through those, you know, those headwinds.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, I'm so opposite. I don't care about running into the wind. Boy, I hate a hill. Oh gosh, I hate hills.
Man, we would be good for each other. We need to expose each other to our weaknesses.
I'm telling you. What is the greatest race in the world?
The greatest race in the world is the Western States 100.
Okay. All right.
In my opinion, it's the greatest race. It's my favorite race that I've ever done.
So you've done Western States?
I have.
Yep. Cool. Very cool.
So it maybe is easy to say that. I, a couple of years ago, went to Chamonix as a spectator to see UTMB.
Yeah.
But without being a participant, I don't think I can call it the greatest race in the world, even if it is maybe the most beautiful place on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool. I never thought about going to watch that, but that would be pretty cool.
And this is a surprise. So, I mean, this is either unwanted or bonus material. You may call it unwanted. I'm going to say it's a bonus material comment, but I love the big races, the big marathons.
Yeah.
My favorite marathon that's still in a big city, but not considered a major, is Los Angeles. And this isn't just, man, our hearts go out to what's going on in the Los Angeles area right now. It's a point-to-point race, starts at Dodger Stadium. The temperatures are super comfortable. And then to finish at Santa Monica by going through all of that. That's my one challenge to New York, is get us by not just the amazing people of New York and the incredible neighborhoods, but by all the things that you would want to see.
Yeah.
Right? Boston is a point to point. And yet there is almost no easy way to negative split because of the back half of the course. You can negative split in LA. So, I mean, they're just, I really love the LA Marathon. For somebody who's looking for an easy place to get to, but is not a marathon major or something that everybody's doing every fall, think about LA.
That's interesting. Yeah, I might try that someday. I don't know. I don't enjoy anything past, I don't know, half marathon. I like the idea, and I don't mind it while I'm just not a big fan of the longer stuff. I'm hoping maybe this experience of this 100-miler will get that marathon to feel different to me. I don't know. We'll see.
So I know your listeners send in encouragement and send in verses and send in questions. Here's the invitation, everybody. Send in whatever it is that's going to make Dean feel differently about the marathon. Do not hold back. Have him test it at that distance.
So is there a bucket list kind of running thing that you haven't done that you still want to do?
I want to run in New Zealand.
Okay.
When I think about trails, it doesn't need to be a race. When I think about trails and point to point and just, you know, things that I've only seen in pictures or in places on screens.
Yeah.
I want to take in the Lord's beauty in New Zealand at some point.
Oh, that seems like
while running.
Yeah, that seems like it would be great. Have you ever done rim to rim the Grand Canyon?
So the short answer is yes, but not rim to rim to rim.
Okay.
So I've done the rim to the river and then back, but I've not done all the way across.
I got you. Okay. Yeah.
Have you done that?
I haven't, but I'd like to.
Okay. So you're going to get on trails and you're going to get big hills, apparently. He's already starting to come around.
It's one of the... Yeah, that's one of those things. It just seems like it'd be a cool thing to do. So
it is an amazing. Have you been to the Grand Canyon?
I have.
Okay, so you already know. You know, there's just something so powerful about the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, this is the man who said, "I don't like hills. I don't like trails." I don't know if anybody's told you this yet, Dean. You're going to need both and bunches.
Yeah.
To be able to do rim to rim.
That is true. That is true. It's just one hill, though.
Just one
really,
hill.
It's just one
really hill. Just goes on and on and on and on and on. But you're right. It's just
it's
one
only
climb.
6 miles long, but it's one or 12 miles long, rather. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So if somebody's listening this long, surely you have something, some great pearl of wisdom or something to share with everybody that is just going to make them go, wow, that's pretty impressive. So what do you have for us?
So, you know, I don't know that it's going to be impressive or pearl of wisdom, and maybe it's just mostly, you know, a huge thank you for sticking with us to the end of this. You know, when I became a believer, I wrote a personal mission statement. And the reason I'm sharing this is because I think it fuses what's so beautiful about what Upward does and the relationship I had even when it was run with God with this organization, even if it was just viewing it from afar, right? But to steward the gifts and resources entrusted to me by my Heavenly Father in a manner that brings Him glory and brings enjoyment, encouragement, and empowerment to others. And to this day, that is the ability that I have the good fortune of stewarding on His behalf. That is that personal interest of mine, which still to this day is running, and that professional passion of mine, which is still retail.
Yeah.
And to be able to do that, man, what an awesome gift from the Lord. And I would just encourage everyone to either continue to lean into that for them, or continue to seek it out, because it is there. And when you trust in Him, He will lead you to it.
Amen. That's awesome. So is there any kind of a, if the Upward Running folks log into Big Peach Running, is there any kind of a special deal or anything they can get, or is there?
So, you know, I'm glad you said this. We're doing this on air. We need to change our code. There used to be a code when it was Run for God. So right. Here it is. We'll do this. And then as soon as we get off mic, I'll make sure our e-commerce team has this done. But use the code Upward, UPWARD. That'll take 10% off of your purchases. I know Upward is in many communities. That'll allow you to shop online if you indicate that you're part of the Upward family in our stores. We have stores in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area, throughout Georgia. We have one store in Melbourne, Florida. So if you're in any of the communities we have stores, just indicate you're part of Upward Running. That'll save you the 10%.
There you go. So take advantage of that.
And thank you to everybody in Upward. You live this out. You embody this. I know the program embodies this. You said it earlier, Dean. You said it on a lot of your podcasts in the intro that I've heard, and that is that, you know, when we do this, we may inspire someone else to do it. And the truth is that the sport right now is healthier than it's ever been.
Yes.
There are more people engaging in what we call a pedestrian active lifestyle than have ever been the case. It is occurring in places where it has not been done committedly as much as what it is today. But there's still a lot more room for growth and improvement. And it's everyone who's doing it now that is going to bring it to others who do it later. So a huge thank you to everybody who's part of your program and obviously been kind enough to listen in on this.
Amen and well said. Well, thank you, Tom. Thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
To sit here and let me pepper you with questions and give you a hard time a little bit. And it's very much appreciated. We appreciate what you do. And again, our heart's like your heart. You know, we want fitness to be something that's important to people, and because it is important
Indeed.
To people, and
yeah, very cool.
That's our goal, and hopefully together we'll get more people there, like you say.
Indeed.
And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.